Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. As Jim said in an email earlier today, there are only good martinis nowadays, but there are some that we do need to address later on. But if you see Jim Garrity walking around Northern Virginia these days, and he just seems to be stopping to smell all the flowers and gaze at the beautiful leaves on the trees as they change colors and just has his jacket swung over his shoulder and whistling a tune, you know it's because Tuesday night went very, very well and the smile is still on his face. Jim, you were doing analysis down at the Blaze TV. We talked yesterday about how the news just got better and better all night long, and most of the competitive races turned out to be not that competitive. What made you happiest on Tuesday?
Well, I would note, Greg, have you noticed that since yesterday morning, little animated birds are coming along and perching on your shoulder? Is anyone else seeing these things? Maybe it's just a victory hallucination. Look, we had always looked at the issue environment and said, man, the world's burning one disaster after another. This administration can't govern. You know, healthcare.gov, Obamacare, the VA, the IRA, you know, everything was there. And the polls indicated that Republicans were doing okay, pretty good, but not spectacular. And we kind of looked around and said, man, you know, we should be winning in a landslide. This should be a giant wave election. And I had looked at it and having learned a very hard lesson from 2012, Greg, I looked at the polls and I said, look, the record says the statewide polls are usually a pretty good indicator. They're not usually off that much. So you follow it, it comes out to Republicans would end the night with, you know, 50 seats, but they'd need to win the runoffs in Georgia and Louisiana. Pretty good in the House, not so great in the governor's races. You know, Rick Scott would lose, and that was it. Well, I was totally wrong, and everything I had said about the polls being wrong and undersampling Republicans and being skewed to the Democrats, everything I said in 2012 about the polls was totally wrong, turned out to be completely right this year at the exact moment I abandoned my theory. I'll take it. It's always nice to be wrong in that way. It's, you know, this was a giant wave election, and you know, one of the interesting discussions that's going on here is this a better year for Republicans than 2010? And I think the answer is yes. This year, all the low-hanging fruit had already been picked. People had won in the 2008 wave for Obama, and the House had already been plucked. And people had expected Republicans to be, you know, they'll be, you know, 5 to 10 seats. Last time I checked, they're at 12. There are a couple of seats where there's a little bit still determined, but, you know, a very good year for them. Obviously, the Republicans did well in the Senate, were, you know, very likely to pick up the Louisiana seat. Republican Dan Sullivan is ahead in the count in Alaska, and I guess they're sending in those last ballots by Iditarod sled dogs, Greg. They should be here sometime by 2017, I understand, those last ballots. Two other things just worth emphasizing in red, no pun intended, just for just sheer shock. One is that it's not just the Republicans did well. The margins were shocking. I mean, it's not just that Larry Hogan won. So Larry Hogan won by 5 points. That was not, you know, a by the skin of his teeth type victory. We felt good about Tom Cotton winning. Tom Cotton won by 18 points. That was not a close race. And then you kind of go down the list. A couple of them turned out to be kind of close. You know, Tom Tillis won by 2. In a good example of the dangers of live television, Greg, I, you know, discussing with Glenn Beck, I said, look, you know, Tom Tillis' campaign is a good example of how Republicans underperformed and missed an opportunity that they, a race they should have won. And then, of course, like, you know, a half hour after we go off air, Tillis takes the lead in the count and ends up winning by 2 points. Joni Ernst, that neck and neck race, won by 8. Gardner was close by 3. But remember, David Perdue is going to go to a runoff and all that. No, he was trailing and you know, there's fear Michelle Nunn might actually win it outright. Won by 8 points. All right, I mean, these were not all that close. The Republican get-out-the-vote effort ate their Wheaties. I think the RNC, which has been getting a lot of skepticism and scoffing, deserves of some credit. Obviously, there's going to be like a million people taking credit for these victories. And I think, honestly, there's actually a million people who had a hand in it. Millions of voters and millions of volunteers and millions of outside groups and all that stuff. So a phenomenal victory that I think we're still digesting. Yes, one or two slipped through and, you know, Daniel Malloy will still get to launch his jihad against National Review in Connecticut and things like that. I think a lot of conservatives, you know, 2012 came as a giant shock to them. They felt they made a better argument. They felt they had a better candidate. They felt Obama's presidency was failing. And the country said, no, we're okay with it. Well, the polls started indicating Americans started souring on Obama in about, mid-2013 or late 2013. This election reassures conservatives to say, hey, the country's not lost. We have not lost the argument. It's not time to head into the bunkers and buy gold and canned food and all that kind of stuff. If it's not a center-right country, it's a center-center-right country, and we can win. And this grand Obama turnout machine doesn't turn out for people not named Obama so far. And the real question is going to be whether Hillary Clinton can do this in 2016.
And Obama for America, now Organizing for America, is basically folding up shop and going away forever. So it's not like they're going to be looking to help Democrats in 2 years at all. So that could be helpful as well. All right, on to the bad martini now, even though they're all good today officially. The president, of course, as is tradition, gives his post-midterm press conference the day after. Would not use any colorful word like shellacking to describe it, and we'll actually get to his description a little bit later in our final martini. But in terms of what issues they can work on, he says he needs to sit down with Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and see where there's any common ground, yada, yada, yada. But there is one thing he's absolutely planning to go full steam ahead on, and that's executive action on amnesty. Here's what he said, though, to encourage Republicans to do what he wants.
Whatever executive actions that I take will be replaced and supplanted by action by Congress. You send me a bill that I can sign, and those executive actions go away.
So if you just pass a bill, Jim, that gives me exactly what I want, that will replace the executive order. And oh, by the way, your entire party will be in a civil war. But oh, that's all you got to do.
Yeah, that was... there was a lot in that. We all kind of were, ready for the president to put on some faux humility or some faux, and he did say, I hear you. But when he takes stances like that, no, he doesn't. And it really wasn't all that easy to misinterpret the message from there. Although Obama said he didn't want to read the tea leaves.
Yes.
I think it was a guy from the Boston Globe, not some crazy right winger, who said, isn't the job of the president to listen to the people? Because that kind of in the, well, who knows what Americans want? If only we had some sort of system that lots of people could participate in and choose between options to give a sense of what they want. If only we had something that could do some, provide that service in our national life. Obama's responding pretty much exactly the way I think a lot of folks did. And as mentioned in the Jolt today, a bit from our friend Asa Spades, I don't think he really knows how to deal with rejection on this level. And so I think he just denies it. He just doesn't, people didn't vote and all that kind of stuff. The New York Times describes someone in the White House who said it's kind of like a guy who gets to the NBA finals and gets injured and can't participate. And that's how Obama sees himself. And I said, look, Mr. President, you weren't injured. You were benched. It's not that you're hurt. It's that you're bad. People do not, people do not like you. They do not like the job you're doing. They do, people say, was there a theme to this, a message to this, a mandate? Yeah, it's that Obama promised things would get a lot better in 2008 and 2012. And since then, he and his administration have failed. They have failed on healthcare.gov. They have failed on the VA. They have failed on the IRS. They have failed to deliver economic prosperity. This is a failed presidency. And so when Democrats said, well, the only thing Republicans are running on is obstructionism, the American people have said, give us more obstructionism. Obstruct, baby, obstruct. Stand athwart the Obama administration yelling stop. The time will come to formulate a positive agenda. I think you're seeing this. George Will has a good column on this. But the president is walking around in some pretty serious state of denial.
Yeah, certainly. And you alluded to our final martini here, Jim, with some of his comments from yesterday saying he's not really in a position to read the tea leaves. You also referred to this comment, which obviously drew a few raised eyebrows.
As president, I have a unique responsibility to try and make this town work. So to everyone who voted, I want you to know that I hear you. To the 2/3 of voters who chose not to participate in the process yesterday, I hear you too.
And a lot of folks were saying the president just assumed yesterday that everyone who didn't vote agrees with him. But if he wants to blame anybody for the turnout, there's this comment, of course, that he made to Al Sharpton's radio show a couple weeks ago.
The bottom line is, though, these are all folks who vote with me. They have supported my agenda in Congress. These are folks who are strong allies and supporters of me. And, I tell them, I said, you know what? You do what you need to win. I will be responsible for making sure that our voters turn out.
There you go, Jim.
It's kind of unique, and this is where you start wondering if there's been some sort of break from reality, because I've never heard, well, everyone who didn't vote agrees with me, used as a justification, you know, because let me give this as basic, and this is for people on our side who say they don't like the Republican nominee for they stay at home and stuff like that. Look, you stay home, whatever happens, happens. Now, if you choose not to vote, that, you know, there are a lot of cases that could be a very legitimate choice. If you like the status quo, then you can stay home. Although I would say you probably should go to vote to affirm the status quo. If you genuinely don't care, you can do that. If you don't know anything about the candidates, you can stay home. You're guaranteed that right. I don't like this talk that America should go to mandatory election voting and stuff like that. That's nonsensical. Here's what really can make Republicans feel terrific about this, and what should really make Democrats feel depressed. They didn't leave any stone unturned. They didn't leave any stone unthrown. There's no mud left. They held nothing back. Maybe Mark Warner took this election lightly. Maybe Anthony Brown in Maryland took this election lightly. But by and large, particularly in all those hard-fought, you know, closely contested Senate races, Democrats, the liberal groups, Tom Steyer, they threw in everything they had, and they lost, period. They cannot claim, oh, if only we had done X or we had done Y. There is no X and Y. And so now the only thing they can say on is, okay, our base consists of a lot of people who just don't pay attention to midterm elections. Our base consists of a lot of people who think that you only vote once every 4 years. I laid this out in the Jolt. Here's the real question for Democrats right now. If they have a base that only votes in presidential years, the good news is they're going to win the presidency, you know, for the foreseeable future, and they'll have a good year in 2016. If their base turns out when there's a rock star, you know, they didn't show up for John Kerry, but they showed up for Barack Obama, then they need to turn Hillary Clinton into a rock star, which is not easy, but I think it's conceivably possible, first woman president, yada, yada, yada. If their base only shows up particularly for Barack Obama, then they're in deep trouble. And right now, we just don't know which one of those options it is. And, you know, they have good reason to be nervous. Republicans have good reason to feel a little fired up. Having said that, 2016 is going to be a higher turnout. It's going to be a different electorate. And there's still a lot of work to be done in the next 2 years for Republicans.
Jim, I'll let you keep skipping along with the animated birds. Talk to you later.
Tweet, 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 tweet. It's good to hear from you, Greg. It's morning in America again.
Very good. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.